Big Blue Kickoff. We're back for another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmoke. The man next to me is Paul Dottino. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter for everything you want to talk about New York Giants football and the National Football League. In about 4 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Mark Long from the Associated Press. He covers the Florida Gators. He'll be joining us to talk about some of the prospects coming out of Florida. There are a lot of them, Paul, so let's do a quick little rundown of them before we get to Mark and we say goodbye to our folks on Twitter. All defense, which isn't surprising given how the Gators have played defensively the last couple of years. That is the strength of their team. There's one offensive lineman we'll ask about, but otherwise a couple of linebackers, a couple of cornerbacks. And I think we're going to see some of these guys go in the second and third rounds of draft day.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. This is a healthy crop of Gators. And there's also one dark horse in here, Brian Cox. Who, you know, because of his bloodlines.
His dad, Brian Cox, former Jets and Dolphins linebacker.
Yes, would not surprise me if he winds up being somebody's late third-day selection. So in addition to the big names that we will talk about, Cox is a guy, a dark horse guy, who I'm also going to want to hear his opinion about. But it's a very, very deep and interesting Florida draft class. You know, to me, Davis is the inside backer who a lot of people are thinking might even be on the Giants' radar. Now, I get it in that he's a late first round, early second round projection. The Giants pick 23. Mm-hmm. I could get that, I suppose.
But
for me,
there it is.
Well, I just think that when you talk about pure value, I'm not so sure that he has more pure value at 23 than some other guys at other positions.
Well, here's the thing for me with Jared Davis. This is why Jared Davis scares me. If you told me he was going to be out there for 16 games playing at his best, I'd say, okay, sign me up. I'm down. The problem is that injuries have plagued him throughout his college career, and he has not been able to stay healthy. And at a physical position like linebacker, I'm going to go out there, use a first-round pick on a guy where I'm not even sure he's going to be available. Mm-hmm. When it's only going to get worse in the National Football League.
Absolutely
so for other positions, you know, muscles can heal. But if you're a linebacker and you're constantly hunting out physical contact, and that's the type of linebacker Jared Davis is, he's a thumper. He's going to come and hit you now. Mm-hmm. So to me, that would be a worry if you decide to take him as a first-round selection.
We will ask our guest when he comes on.
Yes.
But I had three suspect comments about him when I watched his tapes. I worried about his motor. I didn't think he was consistent as he should have been, and maybe that's because of the injuries that you just alluded to, John, and that would be fair. I also thought that he was a bit undisciplined when he played. And then the other comment that I wrote was shed. I thought he had some trouble shedding blocks and getting caught in traffic. That's a problem for me, especially if you're going to be playing middle linebacker for the Giants.
And again, is he a middle or is he a strong side linebacker? That's where a lot of people think he might wind up, is on the strong side, maybe eventually land in the middle. And, you know, Zach Cunningham, similar. People think he's going to start off as a weak side backer. Maybe he can become a middle linebacker eventually. So all these things are things we're going to talk about. And the final position we'll talk about, too, they've got a couple corners coming out.
Yeah.
And one of those guys, Tease Tabor, who I think when we got through the middle of February, he was thought to be a almost sure thing first-round pick, and the combine really hurt him. So you wonder where he's going to fall because of a subpar 40 time in Indianapolis.
Well, John, I subscribe to the theory that the Giants went with many, many, many years ago, and I think they still do. I don't know 100%. They may have changed it, but the Giants' theory was you never downgrade a guy off his pure combine numbers. The only reason you downgrade him is if you find out something medically or something in the personality profile that didn't check out and turned out to be a bad black mark. Those were the only two reasons in years past, and now I'm going back decades, why the Giants would ever downgrade a player's grade off of the combine. Again, the pure numbers, no matter what those pure numbers said, they would never downgrade a guy based on those alone.
All right, so let's get to our guest. His name is Mark Long. He covers the Florida Gators for the Associated Press. And, Mark, you have one of the best Twitter profile pictures I've seen, by the way. Were you, like, in an F-16 or something like that?
I was. I got the good folks at Daytona International Speedway hooked me up last February of 2016, and I got to fly with the Thunderbirds. So
wow,
yeah, pretty awesome. And I can't imagine that I'm ever going to change that profile pic because again,
no,
how do you top that?
No, you don't. You don't change that. Absolutely right. You're with John Schmelk and Paul Dottino here in East Rutherford. Mark, thanks for joining us. And the Gators have a lot of stuff going on this year. In terms of players heading into the NFL, could have a couple first-rounders. You're going to have probably four guys in the first two nights go in this draft. Maybe somebody else will sneak in there. Who knows? I want to start with somebody, Paul, and I haven't mentioned at the start of the show, and that's Caleb Brantley. Because to me, I've seen a lot of opinions on this guy from late second to middle first in terms of where he projects to go in the draft. Where do you think he fits in the NFL? Is he more of your plugging, you know, nose tackle one technique, or is he a guy that's going to get after the quarterback as a move guy, as a three technique pass rusher type?
Yeah, I just don't know that he's big enough to be a three technique. I mean, he is definitely built like a spark plug, like that fire hydrant nose tackle. Not as big as some teams would like to have it at that one technique position, but he's certainly shown the ability to hold the line of scrimmage, stuff the run, and even do some penetration from that spot. So that's where I think he'll be. And, you know, that's not a premium position in the NFL. That's the problem these days. So, you know, that's why I anticipate him probably second round about as, you know, he could certainly slide to the bottom end of the first round, but I'm thinking second round for Caleb Brantley.
One other note I saw on him is that he was involved in a pretty heavy rotation at Florida, right, where he didn't play a ton of snaps. I guess they wanted to keep everybody fresh. It makes sense on the defensive line. A lot of NFL teams do that as well. Where is he in terms of snap count? How much did he play, and did he play mostly in running situations, or did he play mostly in passing situations when he was with the Gators?
Well, his first couple years, he was a rundown, you know, first and second down. And then, you know, they would do a little bit of a hybrid situation on third down where they would bring some bigger ends inside, some faster guys maybe on the inside, and then put the real speed edge rushers outside. So he was off the field on third down early. Last year now, he was a three down lineman. Now, they did have a big rotation. He didn't play, you know, 60, 70 snaps by any means, but he's a guy, you know, I think you can get, 45 snaps out of him pretty easily without worrying about him fading in the fourth quarter. And I think that's probably where he'll be, at least early on, till somebody gets him in what they want for his kind of shape, for D-line shape.
It's funny when you and John talked about in terms of where he fits. I do think he's a penetrating defensive tackle in a 4-3. That's how I graded him out. But a couple of things that I liked about him, which concerned me, based on the fact that I also wrote he's going to need to add some bulk and power to his frame if he's going to play that in the NFL, I graded him out as having a great burst and having a terrific motor when he played. Now, the question does become, if you're going to add some bulk to the frame, how does that affect his burst at the snap, which could slow down, and how does that affect the motor when he does try to have to get after people when he's running down the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, both great questions, and you just wonder, because he's been that size his entire, you know, from his freshman year on. He was a guy who came in with a lot of hype.
Wow.
He was a big kid coming in. So it's not like he's added a ton of weight over the years and is shown. So the question is, if you do bulk him up, how's he going to handle that? Is it going to limit his effectiveness, and how's it going to limit his availability in terms of, you know, now are you talking about a guy who's on the field for 30, 35 snaps, and, you know, if, you know, you're not taking a guy in the first round, maybe not even in the second round, if you're talking about a guy, you know, you're getting 30 snaps out of.
You know, Mark, and the final question for me on Brantley, one other knock I've seen on him is that there were large stretches over the course of the season and even within games where you just didn't say his name a lot. And you didn't notice him on the field that, you know, for a period of 10 to 12 plays, he'll look like Aaron Donald. Then for the next 10 or 12, you know, you forget he's on the field. Did you see a consistency issue with him, or do you think that's a little overblown?
No, I think that's absolutely accurate. And listen, part of it, too, is he was playing on a really good defense. So there are a lot of guys on that defense making plays. So, you know, it kind of gets lost when you're playing next to a guy like a Jared Davis, you guy like Marcus May, guys who are making plays left and right. He followed in the footsteps of John Bullard, who had a really good college career, Dante Fowler, Sharif Floyd. So, following guys like that, I think sometimes the expectations were off the chart, and he didn't quite live up to it on a down-by-down, series-by-series basis.
I'd like to bury the lead if I can. We'll talk about Davis in just a bit, if you don't mind, Mark, because there's a guy in the trenches who I want to talk about on the offensive side of the ball, and that would be David Sharp, who played some left tackle and some right tackle. He's played both over there. Now, 6'6", 343, I get it. I project him to be a right tackle or a right guard in the NFL because I questioned his technique, his athleticism, his feet, his leverage. I think he's a project. I think he is probably late third, maybe even a fourth round pick. How do you see it? I know the Giants fans have asked me on Twitter about him. He is far from a plug and play player for me. And again, I see him as a right tackle or a right guard.
I project him as a bust. How about that?
And you know what? That's okay too.
Yeah, I don't know that you have, is there such a thing as a third or fourth round bust? I mean, certainly there are, but, you know, you're taking a guy in the third or fourth round, especially a guy with his size, you're taking him as a project. You know, if he was a plug and play guy at that, with that kind of size, with that kind of, potential, you take him in the first or second round. But with him, like you said, third or fourth round's probably about where he's going to go, and it's going to be based on somebody taking a flyer on a guy and thinking, hey, I can get him to play. Here's the problem. He will play. He hasn't played for 3 years. He didn't play in high school. Tony Boselli was his high school coach. And call Tony Boselli up, and he'll tell you, when he got him to play, he played well. But getting him to play, Tony Boselli couldn't do it. Two offensive line coaches at the University of Florida couldn't do it. I would be stunned if somebody in the NFL does it. Maybe the guy, the money motivates him to get off his butt and play a little bit. But I'd be surprised. Usually that tends to go the other way. The guy who can't get motivated in high school and college isn't going to get motivated in the NFL.
I'm not going to argue with you one bit. And if you've done the research and Boselli said that, then who am I to tell you that this guy's got the heart, the guts, or the fortitude to come into the NFL? But I do think that his measurables, certainly at the road grader spot and the way people do like some of those bigger guards, someone's going to take a shot and try to make him an NFL right side offensive lineman. I think someone will. Whatever. We'll see.
All right, Mark. I want to jump back to the defensive side of the ball here. And, boy, there's no surprise that Florida had a great defense last year because, wow, there are a lot of guys from the defensive line to the secondary. So let's kind of move back into that defensive backfield. We'll go to linebacker now. A couple really good linebackers coming out of Florida. Alex Anzalone, and, of course, Jarrad Davis. And Davis, to me, Mark, and it's funny, you talk about playing. No one questions Jarrad Davis's want to be out there and play hard, but injuries have really held him back. And that's kind of been a question that, for me, if I'm picking at the end of the first round, I'm thinking about Jarrad Davis, I worry that at a physical position like linebacker that he's going to be on the field for me for 16 games in the pros. Can you get into some detail on some of his injuries, and do you think that is a legitimate long-term concern for NFL teams when they think about drafting him?
I don't, not with him, because I think he's got the size, and I certainly he's got the speed to play linebacker in the NFL. I think Anzalone, to me, is the bigger question mark with all of his injuries. Mm-hmm. But Jarrad Davis, to me, last year, a little bit of an ankle. The guy played through it. The guy played on a bum ankle, ends up injuring the other ankle. But he still continued to play. And even after an ankle injury that cost him several games on the stretch, he came back and played in the bowl game. When he didn't need to play in the bowl game. He had nothing to gain, everything to lose by playing in the bowl game, and he still came back and did it. So the guy had missed the combine because of injuries and whatnot, and then came back and had just a fabulous pro day at UF. I think he jumped 38 inches. Had almost an 11-foot broad jump, and then turned around and ran faster than Jalen Tabor in the 40-yard dash. So, the guy just jumped. He was the big riser, kind of jumped out of off the charts there. And I think that workout combined with what he's put on tape makes him, to me, I think he's the one sure lock for what Florida has for a first-round draft. He's the one guy I would not hesitate at all taking a flyer on him. And listen, this is a guy who's got – an impeccable background, impeccable family record. The kid doesn't get in trouble. He's going to sit in there and he's going to go in those interview rooms and just wow people. I mean, he's that good a kid, that good a student, that good of everything. I just think he's absolutely what you want to build your defense around.
Well, there's no question those intangibles will help his personality profile for a lot of teams, without a doubt. ultimately it is about what you do on the field. I want to refer to Anzalone because you mentioned him and you mentioned his injuries being a high risk. I'm looking at his career history here, a shoulder, a foot, arm, 20 games missed, but boy, he absolutely shows a heck of a skill set for an outside linebacker to be an NFL player.
Yeah, no question. The guy, every time he's on the field, he flashes. Whether it's in the open field tackle, in between the tackles, the guy flashes. He's got some ball skills, got some hands. He absolutely flashes every time he's played. The problem is he can't play the full season. So that's the knock on him. How far it drops him, I don't know. But it's hard to look at his medical history and think that, you know, you're going to get 16 games out of this guy. I just don't typically guys who are injured, who get injured often all the time. So it's not like it's a trend that usually reverses itself when guys get to, it does happen every now and then, but I'd be hard pressed to find too many guys who've been injured as much as he has in Florida. You talk about missing 20 games. He probably could have missed another 10 or 15 in terms of playing injured and whatnot. So, to me, he's a flyer guy. Lots of talent, but boy, you're taking a risk with him.
So we're talking third or fourth round, maybe?
Yeah, I don't even know if I would touch him in the third round. Listen, I always believe that in the first three rounds, you're getting starters. Fourth and fifth round,
you need production.
You take a little bit of a flyer, maybe a special teams guy. Fourth and fifth round, certainly the big time, you're taking just rolling the dice in the later rounds or a guy you loved or whatever. But to me, I wouldn't touch him in the third round because that's a guy you expect to plug and play.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see him as that guy. To me, he's more of a fourth or fifth round, a little bit of a gamble guy. Take a chance on him and see how he see if he can stay healthy.
We're joined by Mark Long from the AP, covers Florida. Mark, what position specifically at linebacker do you see those two guys succeeding at the NFL? Do you see them staying outside? Do you think Jarrad Davis can become a middle linebacker at the next level? Where do you think they're going to end up?
Yeah, I certainly think Davis can be a middle linebacker in a 4-3, maybe even in a 3-4, but certainly in a 4-3, where he's protected behind a couple defensive tackles. I think he can play there. He's certainly got the speed to run and tackle and hit the gaps and play like that. That's where he excels. But I also think he both of those guys could be outside. Neither of them, to me, has shown a ton of pass rush ability. Here and there, yes, blitzing, whatever. But in terms of, lining them up, putting my hand on the ground and getting after the quarterback, neither of those guys has done that. Neither of those guys has shown a real penchant for it. So I'd be surprised if they're anything like that in terms of an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scenario. But certainly inside linebacker and maybe a 3-4, and certainly outside or outside in a 4-3 for sure. And for Davis, I think Davis can play anywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a 10-year guy as a middle linebacker in the NFL in a 4-3.
You really like him.
I do. I love him. And listen, you get to know these guys, and some of them are jerks, and you want to avoid them at all costs. You don't want anything to do with them. Jarrad Davis is a guy I can't get enough of. I can't get enough of him.
We felt that way about John Beeson when he got here.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, we felt that way about John Beeson when he got here, but he couldn't stay on the field, and ultimately, different situation. I mean, you're talking about a kid coming into the NFL. We're talking about a guy who was on his way out, but I know how you feel about a guy like that. I can appreciate your sentiments. I want to go to the corners because I think there are as many as a dozen corners who could be gone by the end of the second round, and between Tabor, who's fallen some because of his numbers, and then Wilson, Florida's got two guys back there who are going to make teams pretty happy, I think.
Yeah, no question. And don't forget this. Those guys were playing last year when Vernon Hargraves was the star cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
And two guys, Keanu Neal and Brian Poole, turned out to be starters for the Super Bowl-bound Atlanta Falcons, NFC champion Atlanta Falcons. Those guys are starters in the secondary. Vernon Hargraves ends up starting for the Tampa Bay Bucks as a rookie. So that secondary, you're talking about, with Quincy Wilson and Jalen Tabor, you're talking about those two guys, being part of a five-man rotation where they're, where you could have potentially five starters in the NFL.
Just add water.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all Will Muschamp recruits, and that's one thing. Will Muschamp is a defensive back at Georgia and a college recruiter at Florida. The one thing he certainly could do is recruit defense and certainly the secondary. Tabor, to me, I know he slipped a little bit. And I, those numbers are hard to overlook when you run a 4.77 on your pro day. But now he's come out since then. I think he told Ian Rappaport that he's got a hamstring injury. I'm not sure I'm buying it. I think that's a little bit of a PR move by his agent and whatnot, and probably pretty savvy.
Yeah.
But to try to throw that out there.
Why not?
If indeed you had a hamstring injury, you should have brought that up at the combine. You should have brought that up at your pro day. You should have brought that up long before it's all said and done, and now you're trying to backtrack after, you know, Kuiper and McShay and everybody else have you in the third round now, when, you know, 2 months ago you were a lock for, you know, one of the first two or three defensive secondary guys taken off the board.
So why don't we just ask you very simple, if you had your choice of either one, okay, which one would you take first and why?
I'm taking Tabor. And I Quincy Wilson's got the size. I mean, he's a freak, physical mm-hmm. freak at cornerback.
6'1".
A lot of people talked about him possibly moving to safety at the next level. People thought he would do that in college, but he never wavered. He was still really good. A lot of people thought he was better than Tabor 2 years ago and as good as Hargrave. So, but I just, this year to me, Tabor separated himself with his ball skills. I mean, the guy is just a freak. Maybe he's slow. I don't know. He certainly never played slow. And I like, you know, that Tabor's all, you know, his big defense right now is just push play. You know, put the tape on. Watch what I did for 3 years. And you're not going to find teams beating me over the top very often. You're not going to find, you know, me running the wrong way down the field. I mean, he's a guy, and he's legit. He's got, you know, he's right on. Now, I think Quincy Wilson's got the size, probably a little bit better tackler than Jalen Tabor. Probably a little bit better press corner than Jalen Tabor, but I don't know that he's got the top end speed. I don't know that either one of them does, but I certainly don't. I just don't think he has the cover skills and the ball skills that Jalen Tabor does.
Yeah, and you know, to me, you talk about Jalen Tabor's ball skills, not a great 40 time. To me, that screams good zone cornerback in the NFL. Someone
yeah.
that can watch the quarterback, go after the football, play cover three, play cover two, maybe have some help on the back end if he gets beat deep.
Yep.
To me, that seems like, and especially at over 6 foot, 200 pounds, that seems like to me where he would project. Is that how they used him at Florida, or were they lining him up in press man as well?
Well, they've done a lot with him, but they played. I mean, listen, those guys were so good on the back end when you're talking about you're talking about having Keanu Neal and Brian Poole in the back end 2 years ago, and Hargraves, Wilson, and Tabor. I mean, it's hard not to just single them up and go, "Hey, you got him." And
yeah.
that's what they did. They did a lot yeah. of press man, maybe not even all that press. You know, just play off and play a little man. But they certainly have mixed it up and played a lot of different things. But when you can play man, when you can man up in the back end and bring 5-6 guys every down on the front and not have to worry about those guys in the back, I mean, man, that makes your defense a lot easier. And that's what, you know, that's why they've been so good.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that these guys are going to make people happy. They'll have to find the scheme, though, as you said, John, as to how they better utilize them. Before you came on, Mark, I was talking to John about Brian Cox, who, because of his bloodlines and his dad playing in the league, will certainly get some interest. I don't know if he winds up being a late third-day pick or, in fact, he's a priority free agent. They got him at 6'3", 265. I wrote down I could see him trying to be a 3-4 outside linebacker or being a 4-3 defensive tackle on the smallest side who would be in a sub-package. But he's very strong for his size, at least the way I saw it, and I also saw him as a pretty good tackler the way he breaks down ball carriers. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, you know what? A guy with a ton of hype, a guy you always kept waiting. When is he going to emerge? When is he going to, you know, show us what we think he's capable of? And it just never happened. I mean, occasionally, a flash here, a play here every few games, but by no means was he what we had seen from Florida in terms of when you're talking about, you know, guys earlier, Sharif Floyd mm-hmm. and Dante Fowler and John Bullard. You know, those kind of guys, and you think, oh, Cox is going to be the next one, and he just never got there. So, you know, I wonder whether he ever will. I look at him as a tweener, and I think that's kind of what you were getting at. You're just like, where are you going to play the guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have a hard time putting him out there as an outside linebacker. I tried to watch him do some, they used to drop some ends and play some cover schemes that way. And I always thought he was a big liability in coverage. Pretty good tackler in the box. Not sure how good a tackler he is in the open field. They didn't risk putting him there very often. So I don't know. I have a hard time seeing him inside, too. I mean, maybe his strength's a little bit. Maybe I missed that at Florida, that he's stronger than I think, but I'd have a hard time seeing him in certain packages inside. But, again, that's not something he did at Florida, so it would be different. And maybe that's it. Maybe he was misused at Florida. But I tend to think that when you look at all those other defensive guys they've rolled out there, that they were getting all they could out of him, and it just wasn't that good.
That's why they call players like that projections, because they are far from a sure thing.
Yeah.
Mark, final question from me. I want to hit on another safety, another defensive back coming out of Florida, Marcus May. They play in the box a lot, five-year senior, seems like a real smart guy. We know what he can do. Can you talk a little bit about his coverage skills? Because we know on the next level with the NFL offenses work now, you're going to have to cover a little bit. How limited is he as a coverage guy as compared to some of his strengths of tackling and, you know, playing the run in the box?
Well, you know, as we talked about, we haven't really seen him have to cover. When you've got Vernon Hargraves and and Tabor and Wilson and Neal and Brian Pruitt, you know, you just don't see him. He's certainly more. They've had him in the box. He's been a box safety. That's kind of what he projects to. I don't know. I know this. Several scouts at his pro day, several scouts and a couple of former coaches who were there said that he's the most intriguing guy that Florida's putting into the draft this year.
Wow.
They find him the most intriguing because they do think there's a big upside there, and they think that you know, when you look at what Keanu Neal did at Atlanta last year, certainly Brian Poole, they think he can be that guy, plug and play, and be in the league for a long time because he's so smart. He's really tough, very durable, and he's got enough coverage skills to get by.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it, he ran a 4.5 at his pro day. So for a safety, that's certainly fast enough to cover tight ends, you would think. Mm-hmm. Whether he can flip his hips and things like that, who knows. But it seems to me he's a low-risk pick because, to me, if you pick him, let's say, in the third round, based on what he's good at and his speed and his athleticism, he's going to be a dynamite core special teams player at the very least for you, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that was what got him on the field early in his career and got him noticed as a pretty sure tackler. He was so good in special teams. So, you know, I think he's more Keanu Neal than Ahmad Black, two guys who came out of Florida. You know, certainly he's got the size, he's got the speed. I think he'll project pretty well in the next level. And I tend to believe that, you know, the scouts and coaches, you know, aren't making that up when they're talking about him being an intriguing prospect, a guy they look at who's got a ceiling.
Well, see, a guy like that
doesn't have a ceiling. He's got a lot of upside. Sorry.
Mark, last thing I'll say is a guy like that, a lot of times it's the intangibles that will tip the scale one way or another for a guy who is, quote, intriguing. There is a suspension listed for him at one point for the opener. I guess it was in 2015. Is there something that we don't know about off the field that may raise a yellow flag?
No, I think that was probably just one of those, you know, these guys all smoke, you know, or I say all of them, but a lot of them smoke, and I think he probably just got caught.
Okay.
Smoking at some point, you know, and so I think that's what it was.
The league is clamping down on that stuff, you know. Yeah, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, Tabor's got a lot more red flags. You know, here's
a
guy who's questioned authority publicly, who's gotten in a fight with a teammate on the practice field, who's been suspended two or three times, certainly one, at least one of them for marijuana. So that's, to me, a little bit more of a red flag. To me, I don't see Marcus May as having a red flag.
So you guys have now lost your defensive coordinator. He leaves to go coach the Temple Owls. Do you expect your defense to change a lot next year, Mark, or are they going to try to keep going along the same path? And because obviously they've had a lot of success defensively the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, they're gonna blitz less. I mean that was kind of what he brought to the table. He was, you know, they nicknamed my head is going Dan Quinn, but I can't. I've already Jeff Collins.
Jeff Collins, yes.
He was nicknamed the Minister of Defense because he brought a lot of elaborate blitzes. So now they're switching to Randy Shannon, who's, you know, been around for a long time, coached some really great teams at Miami as a defensive coordinator. Randy Shannon wants to get home with four, and if he can get home with four, I mean, that's obviously the ideal. But he's not a guy who wants to blitz and be all elaborate and exotic and whatnot on the back end. So it'll be different. But I think they still got an unbelievable number of talented players left. They got a great recruiting class coming in to in the secondary to replace all those guys who have left over the last 2 years. So I think more often than not, I think they'll be okay.
Well, no one doubts the Gators' ability to recruit. That's for sure. Mark Long, we appreciate the time. Fantastic information. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you down the road. All right.
Thank you, Mark.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. He covers the Gators for the Associated Press, and boy, he is the captain of the Jared Davis fan club. I'm going to go now. When I'm done here, I'm going to go take an extra long look at him because he really tried to dissuade me on the injury front, which is kind of the only thing that I was worried about. I'm going to go take a second look at him because, boy, when you say you think he's a sure thing first-round pick and the best player of all these Florida defenders coming out, to me that's a very, very telling statement.
You know, I got all my film work done over the weekend, John. I'm finished now. Everything's done. And I may have to go back and look at him again because I was not that definitive about him at all.
And here's the thing, and this is why I take it seriously. We've had some guests on, and we know this. Some of these guys are homers, and they're going to tell you everybody's fantastic and everybody's great. It happens. You can't help it. It's just the way it goes, right? That was not Mark Long.
No. Oh, no. He seemed very legitimately excited about a player, not because necessarily he liked him, although he said that he did as a guy, but he seemed to break him down as a player that he's got all the things that you want and that the injuries aren't a big deal. And look, all I'm going to say is this. No matter how he feels about those injuries, it's the NFL medical staffs who went to the combine and who went to the pro days and are going to do every poking and prodding that they can possibly do, John, to find out exactly how they feel about his medical. And that's going to have a big, big impact on what other teams think about it.
I will say this. For me at least, when I look at these things as someone that has no medical training at all except for dealing with my finger, the injuries that worry me the least are ankle injuries. Knee injuries worry me.
Of course.
Foot injuries worry me.
Yeah.
Ankle injuries, at least for NFL players, NBA players is a different story. Like with the Grant Hills of the world with his ankle problems, sometimes those can become debilitating because of the way the NBA game is played.
Yeah.
For me, for football, if you had my choice between knee, ankle, foot, and those are kind of like the three type of lower extremity injuries you get, ankle would be the one I'd be most willing to roll the dice on, general.
You know, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the weirdest part about it is there have been guys who have been derailed by turf toe.
Well, yeah.
So you never know.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, you never know.
And the other thing, too, that I make note of, we've talked to so many of these teams that have players coming out, right? Every single team that we talk to and we talk about, they have a safety that they really like to go like in the first four rounds of the draft.
Well,
this is going to be such a heavy safety class, I think. And it's a shame, quite frankly, the Giants don't really have a need there because I think
once you
get to the third and fourth round, and, you know, the Giants can draft one if they like a player in that situation.
And there'll
no
be good ones. There'll be good ones available.
That's my point. There's going to be a guy that can come in and maybe even start for you in his rookie year in the third or fourth round.
And you know, I know this is a Giant show, but you have to understand the division is important, too. This is why the Dallas Cowboys are actually going in here to this draft saying, we're going to draft a ton of defense.
Dude,
we're going to build an entire secondary like Dr. Frankenstein.
Honestly,
what they're going to do.
In my opinion, in their first four picks, I would be surprised if the Cowboys didn't pick all in some combination of defensive ends, cornerbacks, and safeties.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And I think they're going to be 4-for-4 with those three positions in
without
their first
a doubt.
Four picks.
Without a doubt.
And you know what? Who could blame them? If I was them, I'd do the same thing.
They cannot take an offensive player in the first four rounds. And, of course, the risk is, A, does the guy work out? Does he not work out? And, of course, as a rookie, there's going to be a hell of a learning curve. So even if all of them hit.
Oh, there are no guarantees.
First year, they got a big problem.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, you know how it is. Some guys that become really good players are still not very good their rookie year. Other guys do it right away, and it's a big roll of the dice. And by the way, it's not just the Cowboys. Eagles can use secondary players.
No question.
Redskins can use secondary players.
Look, with the way this has become a passing league,
there
are a ton of teams out there saying, oh, look at all of these defensive backs.
I was so happy. I was keeping my attention on the division. But I think that's a big thing. And by the way, you know, and you want to go a few miles down the road to Flora Park, you know who can use a lot of secondary players? Jets.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of teams out there, And, again, focus on the NFC East because that's the division the Giants are in, obviously. But, look, we know the Cowboys' offense is going to be pretty good next year.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need defensive players. The Eagles have tried to improve their team offensively early in the offseason. The Alshon Jeffrey signing, the Torrey Smith signing, Lane Johnson back from suspension. I could see them going running back at some point in this draft, too, because I think they need an every-down runner. But besides that, I think they're going to look to add to their secondary. And look, the Redskins' secondary has been a problem for years.
Forever.
For years. For
Since Darryl Green retired.
Yeah. No, seriously. You're laughing. It's absolutely true. Besides Darryl Green, Sean Taylor, and then Champ Bailey for a period of time.
Right.
They've had a lot of issues. And I guess D'Angelo Hall, maybe one or two good years for them, but
yeah,
they've had a lot of...
Ryan Clark had a little bit of time.
They've been all right, but they need secondary.
No, they do. They do.
201-939-4513. Great stuff from Mark Long from the AP. We thank him for joining us. Let's go down to Les in Florida, who I'm sure has opinions of his own on the Florida prospects. Hey, Les, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I'm
hello.
A long-time listener. Hello?
Hey, we're here, Les. Go ahead.
Okay. Long-time listener, my second time calling.
Great.
I just wanted to touch on a few things here. I know Jerry Reese has been doing really good, last couple of years, getting players in and developing really good players. But I think it's time that hopefully the team could address the linebacking core, and get at least that one Pro Bowl-type player on the linebacking core. Because, when you look at other elite defenses, I think that they have at least one Pro Bowl player on every level, and I think we're missing that to really be that defense that we want to be. And I know we're probably not going to draft first round a linebacker, but I was looking at a player called the Blair Brown out of Ohio. I don't know what you guys think of him, but he looks pretty good, for like maybe a second or third round pick. And
I forgot, we had somebody on. It was one of the draft experts. I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it wasn't Josh Norris. It was somebody we had a while ago, and he was actually an alum from Ohio, and he loved Blair Brown. And he had Blair Brown as their second or third round pick. So he's somebody that's out of Ohio. He's a 5-year senior, ran a 4.65, and he's somebody that there are guys out there that really do like him as a middle round pick to help out.
5'11", 238, and you do understand that for an inside backer, 5'11", look, it's not like it can't be done.
Well, he was a will. He was in my things, he was a weak side linebacker.
I think he's going to wind up playing inside, though, in the NFL.
Okay, that could be true. Only a 4.65 40,
yeah,
which is not super fast.
That's
for
a little bit of an issue,
yep,
outside. So, I didn't watch tape on him. I will tell you the report that I had was that he was a 7th-round pick. I did not watch tape on him. He was not one. I only watched tape on about 5 minutes middle linebackers because I quite frankly don't think the Giants are going to be in the market for one. I think B.J. Goodson's going to wind up with that job.
Okay. No problem. And I also want to get you guys' thoughts on, because we definitely still need a tackle. Eric Flowers, I think he's still developing. He'll get stronger. His technique will probably get better. He's probably better as a right tackle, though. But and the other tackle we have for Florida, I know Eric Flowers has been getting a lot of a lot of clout, but he hasn't been playing well either.
Maybe Bobby Hart.
I want to get Bobby Hart.
Yeah.
Yes, he hasn't been playing well on the other side either. So we can't have two weak offensive tackles. I'm looking at it. How would you guys rank the top three tackles? Cam Robinson, Ryan, the other guy Ryan Ramczyk, and Garrett Bowles. How do you guys have him? I have Cam Robinson as the top guy.
Yeah, you know what? Les, I'm going to disagree with you there. Look, I'm no expert on offensive line technique or anything like that and, breaking these guys down. But from what I've seen of Cam Robinson and from what I've heard from people who I trust about Cam Robinson, if you want to look at the physical stature and tools, I think Cam Robinson's your number one guy. Because you look at him, he passes the eye test.
Big dude.
He's big, he's long arms, strength. He has athleticism.
He did handle Myles Garrett, which is the number one pick.
He did, but here's the problem. He doesn't do that consistently, Les. And there are games where guys that shouldn't handle him. And the one knock I've heard on him is that he has a lot of problems dealing with speed rushers. And guess what? If you have problems with dealing with speed rushers in college, when you show up to the NFL and the guys are quicker and faster, you're going to run into a lot of issues with speed rushers. And the last thing I want is a guy protecting Eli Manning's blind side that can't handle speed rushers. Because guess what he's going to see every single week in the NFL? Better speed rushers than what he saw in college.
You know, you have to ask yourself a question. If you're going to draft him really high, especially if you want him to be a left tackle, you have to wonder if the foot speed or lack thereof that he showed in college is going to be correctable, and you can do something with it, and you can help enhance that, because if you watch his tape, okay, you can imagine some of these NFL edge rushers who are going to be,
because he takes that one false step and guys just fly by him.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, appreciate it, Les. Thanks for the call, bud. And so I think for both me and Paul, he would be behind both Ramczyk and Bowles, correct?
Yes.
Now, here's the thing with Bowles. You love his attitude. That's one thing. He has that offensive line mentality that
you
want. Here's the problem with Bowles. Only 1 year at Utah. He's 25 years old, so he's an older prospect. He's not the strongest guy in the world. He has to develop that part of his game. He's a great athlete, but I do think there's going to be a learning curve for him. I think there's a lot of detail-oriented things that he needs to accomplish technique-wise at the NFL level. And I think, frankly, Ramczyk has similar deals. He played 1 year at Wisconsin. He doesn't have a lot of experience.
Hip injury?
And the hip injury, obviously. If you guarantee me that Ryan Ramczyk is, you know, good to go for mandatory minicamp in June, he's going to be healthy by then, I'd probably make Ramczyk my number one guy. But without the knowledge of what that hip is, I mean, if he can't do anything until training camp starts, you know how far behind he's going to be?
A lot.
I mean, not even from a learning technique perspective, just from a strength perspective. The hips are everything. How are you going to work your base if your hips hurt and you're rehabbing that? This is very hard.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. You know, the way I see it, and we've told you this many times since we came back from Indianapolis, John and I did shows out there, and we certainly learned a lot more about these guys than we knew going in. The mixed reviews on this top class of offensive tackles coming out of college are very disconcerting. Because in years past, some of these guys who were ranked in the upper echelon were graded as blue-chip plug-and-play guys. We're not getting blue-chip plug-and-play reviews on these guys.
There are big red flags on a lot of them. And quite frankly, the scary thing, Paul, even on guys in the past where you didn't have red flags on them, like Greg Robinson, for example, my goodness, we had people come on the show and rave about Greg Robinson being the next, you know, Tyron Smith or Tony Baselli or Jonathan Ogden. The guy doesn't have a job. I mean, he struggled mightily. He doesn't have a starting job in the league. So I mean, it's just hard. It's hard.
Here's what I would say. It's not that any of those guys, although I'm not as big on Robinson and neither is John, it's not that Bowles or Ramczyk would not be worthy of a number one pick, right? Because I'm sure that somebody to the mid to later rounds is going to say, look, we really like their future. We think we can polish them up. We think we can coach them up. We think we can have a guy who's going to start for us for 8 years
but
or
maybe,
10 years.
But maybe not in 2017.
But maybe, yeah, they're not plug-and-play guys right now. So I don't want to disparage those guys and say they're not legitimate, really good prospects.
No, I think there'll be at least two offensive tackles picked in the first round.
Right. Uh-huh. But you have to look at your individual situation and how you think you can add the turtle wax. And how quickly can you add the turtle wax to get them to do where they need to go? That's the real question.
A lot of wax on, wax off. Sweep the leg, Dottino. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Sean in California. He's up next. Hey, Sean.
What's up, guys? How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing well. How are you, pal?
Hi.
Hey, that was a great call from work. I learned so much things, like crazy. Because Caleb Bradley was, I really wanted us to pick him in the first round, knowing that he might drop to the second. I don't want us to pick a first-round pick. I want a first-round pick to be a first-round pick. You know what I'm saying? Saying Caleb Bradley is not going to get drafted in the first round, but I want to be sure at 23 that we're actually getting a good, a reasonable pick.
For me, honestly, I think 23 is probably a little bit early for any of the defensive tackles in this draft, in my opinion.
Although, you really are high on Malik McDowell,
You
could think about him if you wanted to. You could think about
him. I think there will be better. Now, look, if you want to make need that big a part of the equation, that's fine. In my opinion, it will not be difficult to find more talented position players at other positions when you get to 24.
And I don't have an argument with that.
Right.
But I could see somebody picking him in that ballpark.
Yes, I think the ballpark.
What's the deal of Dante Foreman? Did he get hurt or something? Because now I see him, he was like estimated number one, in the first round, then he fell to the second round. Then I'm seeing him not even going into a third round now, and he's the only running back in this year's draft that got 2,000 rushing yards in one season.
Now, it's funny. I heard an interesting comparison to Tino, which I think you'll find fascinating. Some people are afraid Foreman could be the next Andre Williams in that he had a lot of success in college. A lot of it was because of the offensive line and the system he played in, and he's going to have trouble in the NFL. And the other thing, too, about Foreman, when you look at Foreman and you look at his measurables and you look at his numbers, you see, holy cow, this guy's 240 pounds. He's 6'2 or 6'3, whatever he is.
Well, 6'4. 6'3.
6'2, 230. He's a big dude. He ran a good 40 time. You know, he had the production in college. But then when you watch him run, Sean, you don't see Brandon Jacobs. He doesn't run like he's Brandon Jacobs. He runs like he's 6'2", 210 pounds, which I think teams are seeing that.
I agree. And it's funny you say that because one of the grading words that I use when I watch a guy is angry. Does he play angry or does he not? Foreman does not play angry. That's a problem for me.
He looks like Brandon Jacobs, but doesn't run like Brandon Jacobs.
I had trouble with his pass protection. I had problem with his lack of receiving experience, catching balls out of the backfield. And I also actually put down handle. I don't think he handles the ball very well.
That's interesting. I haven't noticed that.
And so, to me, and I've heard a lot of people say to me when they don't like Perine, Samaje Perine, who is my guy for the Giants, they say to me, well, Dante Foreman's just as good or even better. I'm not in that camp at all. I think Perine is miles better than Foreman.
And Sean, just to add on that real quick, Dane Brugler, who we'll have on once more before the draft, and I'm looking at his draft card right now, he has Foreman as his 14th ranked running back in this draft. And at the 14th ranked running back, he has him projected to go, and I'll get the round for you here.
Fourth or fifth round probably, right?
I would probably say fourth for Foreman. He has Foreman as the 14th ranked running back as either a fourth or fifth round pick.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And, like, I have some trade possibilities I want to get in at the end of my call. But, Paul, I wanted to say, like, I've seen P. Ryan go from 13 to 12. Now he's all the way into Mike Mayock's top five, I think.
Don't say that.
32 benches helped him, you know, at the combine. Like, this kid just went from the top 15 to the top 12. Now he's ranked as the top five, like, estimated to go, like, at the top of the – you know, early second to, you know, possibly the first round. And that's just amazing to see these kids, like, you know, they want it. This is their dream, and they work so hard. And to see them, you know, pushing their draft stock, I just look at that. I'm just so impressed by it.
Yeah, Sean, here's the thing.
So amazing.
And I know Paul's – and, Sean, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. And I know Paul is very disappointed, but to me, and I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think he's going to be there when the Giants pick in the second round.
He's not. He's going to go.
Quite frankly,
he's going to go.
In my opinion, I think that's going to be a blessing in disguise. Because I wouldn't want to pick him in the second round anyway. Not that he's not a good enough player to go in the second round. I just don't think he's going to get enough snaps. You have Paul Perkins here already to warrant in a second round pick. And I think you can find a Jamal Williams later on, a Connor from Pittsburgh later on.
Yes, absolutely.
Kareem
I
Hunt
understand.
From Toledo, I think, is another guy you can think about. I know he's not the bruiser you want, but I do think he's a good running back. I think you
there
can find those guys later in the draft that'll give you what you need as the third head in that, you know, three-headed monster.
You know, we will talk so much about this on our second night draft show on that Friday night because that's where this is going to wind up falling.
Yeah, talk is right. We're not going to shut up that night.
And that's going to
be sick of us, by
a
way.
Very long night, but in a thumbnail sketch.
Yes.
When I identified P. Ryan way back when, a couple of months ago, back in maybe January, I think a lot of people thought he was a fourth rounder. And then all of a sudden, he started creeping up a little bit.
Well, they realized he was more than just a third and one guy.
And that really disappointed me because I'm like, okay, you know, they're going to have to take him in the third round if they want him. And then things started creeping up even more. And then he gets to the combine, and he outlifts almost all the offensive linemen. And all of a sudden now, guess what? Now you're not going to get him in the third round because he's going to be high third round. And, oh, wait a minute, now he's creeping into the second round.
Brugler has him as a third-round pick still, by the way.
Does
he? Brugler has him. He has him as a third-round
okay,
pick.
Well,
he has him as running back number 7 on his list.
What bothered me, and I think I mentioned this to you, when I was on the phone with my personnel guru for many years, and he says to me, oh, I love the guy, but you're not going to get him in the third round. I told you this phone call.
You did. That was and like, I said, John. That was like 2 months ago.
And I said, mm-hmm. No. He goes, uh-uh. He's a second round guy. You're not going to get him in the third round. And that just, I was crushed. And it's only getting worse. It's only getting worse.
Where do you think Joe Mixon's going to wind up going? I know it's impossible to tell what team's going to take a chance with an off the field issue like he had. Everybody knows about the video with him hitting the young woman in the restaurant.
Third day.
You don't think he's going to sneak into the third round?
Third day.
I think a team will pick him at the end of the third round. That's my guess.
Terrific skill set.
Be his boy.
Terrific skill set.
I have some, anonymous front office personnel, the famous anonymous front office people,
yes.
have told some reporters that they have him in terms of if that thing didn't happen off the field, he's in Leonard Fournette neighborhood.
Oh yeah. He's very, very easily a first-round pick. Skill set is there. He's a very talented player, has all the tools. I can't get past the issues.
Oh, no, and that's understandable.
And I think many teams have taken him off their boards.
So you think P. Ryan goes before him?
I think he has to.
Okay.
Look, you guys remember Lawrence Phillips? Mm. I mean, he had everything going for him, but he was an absolute mess personnel-wise. His personnel file was horrible.
And as bad as that video is, I get the feeling from what people are saying about the kid, he's actually not a bad kid, which is hard to believe after watching that. I get it.
Maybe not. But my point to you is this, John. There were teams in the NFL, and I know of at least half a dozen, maybe more, who I had gotten word of. Lawrence Phillips is off our board entirely. We got our 300 players or whatever on the board. He's not even there.
And you might have 15.
He's gone.
And you might have 15 teams that say the same about
you. And that's
Mixon.
My point.
Right.
There are going to be teams that will say, don't even bring his name up because he doesn't exist to us.
And that might be an ownership decision.
Absolutely.
To be honest with you.
Could be.
Who knows? 201-939-4513. Phil in North Carolina. Hi, Philip.
Yes, guys.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah, good. Hey, I usually call to complain about the certain draft picks and letting the tight ends in the past go like Martellus Bennett and so forth. But so today, though, I'm going to focus on mid-round picks, and I'm going to point out that under Ernie, our middle rounds were much more fruitful, and our middle rounds in the last under Jerry, unfortunately, have not been very good, and I don't include things like if someone turned all the time, I include that as a bad pick, and this is my reasoning for that. Part of it, I think, is motivation. Guys that want to play no matter what, sometimes they find their way back to the field, and guys who are just happy with that first check, and they fizzle. And so I've been around a long time, as long as Paul, and I've seen many, giant games. And so you can see right away guys that have the desire or not. And I think we've done better the last couple of go-rounds. So I would leave this. I would ask you, and I'll listen off the air.
Yes, sir.
Compare the Ernie Accorsi middle rounds to the Jerry. And don't include, injuries as an excuse. So I'll leave you at that. And thanks a lot. I love the show. Bye.
Okay. Take it easy. Well, I get what you're saying, but, like, Chad Jones got into a car accident. I mean.
Well, that counts as an injury, unfortunately.
Well, he said don't use injuries as an excuse.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Chad Jones, what are you going to do?
It is.
I mean, that's just bad luck. Look, we had this conversation, I think, last week. The third round has not worked that well.
No.
Over the past 5 or 6 years.
No.
It just hasn't. Now, some of these guys can maybe still turn things around. Like Darian Thompson. I mean, he hurt his foot. The guy didn't miss one game in college in his whole year
Should
career
be a starter.
At Boise State.
Should be a
he
starter.
Hurt his foot. I mean, and look, I know you said don't use injuries as an excuse, and I apologize for that. But look, facts are facts. We aren't going to tell you that, you know, the I'm assuming you've middle rounds, third, fourth, and fifth. Is that, I guess that's kind of what he's talking about for middle rounds.
I think so. Well, wasn't Nat Burhe a five? And he had three concussions. And right. Now we don't even know if he's going to be coming back to the team. But I think everybody thought he was going to be a solid player. And what happened? He got derailed.
Yeah. But look, we're not going to tell you that, you know, they've gotten a ton of value out of that. And, you know, if you want to go back to, you know, some Ernie's drafts and you talk about – remember, Jerry Reese had a big part in those Ernie Accorsi drafts,
too. He was the college director of personnel.
Well, that's my point. So, obviously, Ernie had the final say, and now Jerry Reese has the final say, and that's a different situation. We get that. But it's not like Jerry Reese came from a different organization. He was here in charge of the college drafting process during Ernie's tenure as general manager.
Here's what I would say, and I appreciate the caller's comments, and certainly the record speaks for itself. It's all there for everybody to see. Mm-hmm. I would say to you this, none of that stuff that happened in years past is relevant this year.
Correct.
And the reason it's not is because, you know, the Giants have a team that is in a certain place and time. It's been built a certain way. Last year, they definitely altered their drafting strategy a little bit to where they came down and said, you know what, we are definitely going to look at all clean players that don't have any personnel issues, or any injury issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They did kind of tweak the way they were going to draft. And I think we would all agree to this point that rookie draft class looked very productive.
And I think that was maybe in the response, too, to some of those middle-round failures. I mean, you go back.
John Maris said things had to change, right?
Right.
So they tweaked them.
Right. For example, just to give you some names, Owamabe Odighizuwa coming out of college. He missed a whole year of college football because of injury. We know that there were some injury history problems there.
There was some risk involved.
For his talent level to be there in the third round, everybody thought it was worth the risk. We talked about him being an absolute steal in the third round that year. And so far with the injuries, it hasn't worked out. You want to go back a couple years before that, DeMontre Moore talent-wise talked about as a late first-round pick.
Tremendous.
The reason he dropped
set.
To the third round is because of what's going on in between the ears. And that was a high-risk, high-reward pick.
You know the one that hurts me
it
the
didn't
most?
Work out.
Can I just
Jaron
say
Hosley?
No.
Because you love Hosley.
I loved Hosley.
That's why I thought that was going to be your pick.
No, the one that hurts me the most is Kenny Phillips.
Huh. Well, he was a two.
Yeah, but this was an outstanding perennial Pro Bowl prospect.
He was a one,
prospect.
I'm sorry. What am I saying?
He was a one.
He
was a one.
Sorry.
He was a one. But his knees. Mm-hmm. And he was going to be a multiple Pro Bowl player. That's a guy who had just star written all over him. And knees went. Crushed. You know, Hosley just never developed for a lot of different reasons, and I still say that I like his skill set coming out.
But again, derailed Hosley too, off the field stuff.
Yep.
So I think in those middle rounds there were some high risk, high reward guys that didn't work out. 201-939-4513. But again, like Paul said, look back at how the strategy changed a little bit last year, and you think that's going to continue moving forward. Final call of the show is Dino in New Jersey. Dino, what's up, pal?
Hey, how you doing, Paul and John?
Doing great, Dino. What's happening?
Paul, I spoke to you and Lance last week about the draft and Njoku and everything. Now, my thing is, obviously, we're looking to win now and want to get to the Super Bowl and win another Super Bowl. But the thing that scares me, we're going to have to pick, get three or four good guys in this draft because the team that's going to be looking across us is going to be New England. And they're loaded.
Dino. Get to the Super Bowl first before you start worrying about the Patriots.
No,
the Giants have won
a
playoff game since 2011.
Fast forward button.
I'm just, if you're going to load up, you better load up because.
I understand.
Projecting who you might, if you're going to make it that far, you got to project who you might be going up against.
Right, no, I understand.
So in other words, before I was big on Njoku, which I still am. But that's a home run. But now what Paul alluded to when I spoke last week, O.J. Howard is a grand slam. So now if he can fall somewhere in the mid-teens or whatever, you got to do whatever you can to grab
he
him.
He won't.
You know, no, here's the thing. Look, no, hold on. I will play his theoretical game. Let's say he's there at 15. Just theoretically. I don't think that's impossible. It's not impossible. I think
15?
It's unlikely, but it's not impossible. And, Dino, here's the thing. And we had this conversation last week, and I know Paul disagrees with me, and that's fine. The more and more I think about this draft, to me, this is a trade-down draft. This is not a trade-up draft.
Absolutely.
There are so many great I shouldn't say great. There's so many good prospects in this draft where there's a chance the guy you get at 33 or 34 isn't going to be much different than the guy you get at 23, especially if you're picking a defensive end or a corner. So to me, I think the Browns, for example, are in great position in this draft. The teams that got all those comp picks, they're in a great position in this draft because there are so many good players that are going to be there in rounds 2 and round 3 and even early round 4. I want as many picks as possible in this draft. I don't want to send away a second or third round pick to move from 23 to 15 because to me, you're going to regret it because that second or third round pick could be a starter for you if it's at the right position.
Those comp picks are going to be probably more fruitful than any of them in the last few years.
I'm sorry, say that again, Dino.
I said I wouldn't be mad if we trade up in the second round.
Do you want to trade your third round pick away, though?
Unless we had, if we were targeting someone that is going to help us, absolutely.
See, to me, though, I don't think moving from 57 in the second
55.
Round? 55 in the second
55.
Round? I don't think going from 55 to, say, 38 is going to change much the quality of the player you're going to get. I have enough faith in this front office and this scouting department where you can stay put at 55 and get a player that's going to help you just as much as a player at 38. Now, could a freak show thing happens where, you know, something comes out late and, you know, Ryan Ramczyk's sitting there at 38 and you're like, holy cow, we got to trade up to get this guy? Yeah, sure. Then maybe I consider it. But if all things are equal and nothing weird's going on, I think the guy you get at 55, Dino, is going to be nearly as good as the guy you get at 38, my opinion.
John and I had a discussion the other day in the lunchroom about this, about agreeing to disagree. And this is one of those cases
where...
And
that's fine.
He has a strong case for this. I think I have a strong case from my point of view, and it's okay.
And I get
and
where you're
okay.
coming from, too.
It's
you
perfectly
you
fine.
Want to get that one piece you think you really need to put the Giants over the top. And I get it. I don't think the cost is worth the percentage chance of the benefit. Because even if you get that one guy you're
Understood.
Really sure about, there's still a chance he's not going to work out. It's the draft. It's a crapshoot. Who knows?
I know.
I'm very much in the analytic camp when it comes to the draft. I want as – you know, when I'm playing craps, right, you know, I want as many chances to roll that dice as possible because it's giving me more chances to win.
Right.
And that's what I want to try to maximize.
Part of where I'm coming from may have to do with the fact that the Landon Collins thing worked out so well. And that may have affected my viewpoint a tad because logically I've made a case to myself that I would do this. Mm-hmm. And then when I think about, well, they did it with Landon Collins and look how great that turned out, that's even more of a reason to do it.
And I get it.
And again... there's reasons on both sides of this fence. This is an agree to disagree situation.
Yeah, well, I definitely think we definitely need a pass catching tight end. That we need a power back. I mean, if Hankins doesn't sign before the draft, then we're definitely going to have to get a defensive tackle. Mm-hmm.
Which is why you don't want to
draft like the cornerbacks are deep. The DBs are deep in this draft, so I definitely would take one of those and an offensive lineman.
Well, Dino, you're making my point for me. You just said I want to grab a tight end. I want to grab an offensive lineman. I want to grab a corner or a defensive line because they're so steep in this draft. I want to get a running back because that's so deep. Well, there you go. That's four. If you're trading away one of your first four picks in this draft, you're only going to be able to fill three out of those four spots with a premium pick.
Well, I'll be happy if we just get three good players in this draft. I'll be happy. And then maybe like a fourth or fifth player that...
Then don't trade, Dino. Stay where you are.
Yeah, exactly.
That's okay, too. I don't have a problem with that either.
Yeah, but I see all these mock drafts saying that we're going to take maybe, like Jeremiah said, that we're going to take, not that we're going to take, but he's projecting Dalvin Cook. First off, they're not going to take him because he's not a character guy. He has off-the-field issues. The Giants are about character guys, captains, people that don't have off-the-field issues, injuries, stuff like that. And then I wouldn't pick a running back in the first round, first off, because there is a lot of good running backs in this draft. And then another guy had us picking a quarterback with pick 23. That's ridiculous. To sit behind Eli for 3 years or 4 years?
Here's what I would tell you, Dino, here's what I would tell you, though. Please be careful when you look at a mock draft, because some of them but I'm not trying to make fun of anybody, but here's the thing. Some of mock drafts are done. People just say, these are the best 32 players on the board in order, and they'll just give you the next best player.
Or other people will obsess with need and just give somebody a player at a position no matter what.
So you must read the criteria of the mock draft before you even sit down and start to contemplate whether or not they're crazy or they're making sense with their picks.
You know, we got to run,
pal. I actually laugh at somebody.
Well, so do I. That's why I don't do mock drafts.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Dino. Thanks, man. Yeah. Have a good one. Take it easy, bro. Appreciate it. And look, and I'll say this, too. And I actually haven't had a chance to make this speech in a while, so I'll get to make it now.
Good.
When we go to the cafeteria at lunch, Paul, who's not in the cafeteria eating that works for the team right now?
Jerry Reese.
No. Well, he's there, he's there sometimes.
He's usually upstairs.
The large group of people that will be here in about a week that are not in the cafeteria now around lunchtime.
Oh, yeah. The guys who wear the jerseys.
No, not those guys either. Damn it, you're not playing my game right. The scouts aren't here yet eating lunch during lunchtime in the cafeteria.
Oh, okay.
So, I was trying to have you leave me alone. I'll have to do it myself.
I'm sorry.
The people that are not here at lunch, I didn't clue you in. It's my fault. There are no scouts here yet. Do you know why? The scouts are still on the road. They're still going to pro days. They're still doing investigations. They have not come back yet and began to have their meetings with Jerry Reese and Mark Ross to put their draft board together. So do you know what mock drafts are worth? About what I pick up after my dog when I take him for a walk when I get home from the office.
I didn't want you to go there.
That's what they're worth,
but
okay?
It's okay?
A big bag of poop that they haven't even gotten here yet and set up the draft board. So what do mock drafts mean? Mock drafts are fun. It's a way for people like our buddy Matt Cohen that get hits on their website from people that want to see who their teams are going to pick. That's what mock drafts are. Now, we're getting to the point now. We're damn close. And we're right on the border where mock drafts do tend to matter. And guys are getting fed real information from GMs about where the people are on their board. So you're going to see, I think, things change in the next week or two when these things become a little bit more meaningful. But in my opinion, still 17 days out, give or take.
Yeah.
They're not really that meaningful yet. Just think about when you walk your dog and you pick up after them. That's what they're worth right now.
They're great conversation pieces, and that's all they are.
And their way to get clicks.
Then again, so is a pet rock.
Because there's nothing.
What does that do for you?
There's nothing that gets more clicks than mock drafts.
Yeah.
Trust me.
They're big time.
Trust me.
Big time.
Trust me. For Paul Tatino, I'm John Schmo. Thank you to Mark Long from the AP on Florida. Tomorrow, we'll be joined by Jim Kleinpeter, who covers the Tigers of LSU. And if you remember, he's the guy that gave us a lowdown on Odell Beckham Jr. a few years ago when we had him on. He gave us some great information. So we will have Jim on tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live, breaking down the folks from the Tigers coming out in the NFL draft. For Paul Tatino, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Take it easy. Have a good one, everybody. Enjoy that beautiful 80-degree weather.